Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kehan. Today, we'll discuss the recently published article by Wang et al. Titled, Regulation of In Vivo Cardiac Contractility by Phospholamin, Role of Sodium-Calcium Exchange. This article published in our March 2011 issue. My guests today are Associate Editor Gil Weir, Senior Author Joe Chung, and leading expert Don Burrs. Let's get started.
Thanks, Kara. And first, congratulations, Joe, to you and your co-authors on a very nice new paper in AJP Heart. This new paper explores a physiological role for regulation of sodium-calcium exchange in mammalian heart. And it seemed to me very likely that these results will contribute significantly to our understanding of stress responses, such as fight or flight, as well as cardiac hypertrophy and heart failure, where sodium-calcium exchange is known to be upregulated. Phospholamin, our putative regulator of the sodium-calcium exchanger, is a small membrane protein that is one of the FXYD family of regulators of ion transport. And in heart, actually, phospholamin is the major membrane substrate for phosphorylation by protein kinase A. In its unphosphorylated state, phospholamin binds to the alpha subunit of the sodium pump and exerts an inhibitory effect in that it decreases the affinity of the pump for sodium ions. Phosphorylation of phospholamin at either serine 68 or serine 63 or both results in an increased affinity for sodium and an increased sodium transport rate. So in that respect, phospholamin, interestingly, is rather analogous to phospholamban, which similarly inhibits calcium transport by circa. It became clear, however, that in heart, the picture with phospholamin was more complicated than just as a regulator of the sodium pump. Perhaps, Don, as our expert reviewer, you could begin by giving us your perspective on this.
Yeah, I enjoyed reading this paper, and I think Joe's lab has published a whole series of articles really developing this notion that phospholamin in its phosphorylated state can actually inhibit the sodium-calcium exchange. So I think this paper has strength in a couple of levels. First, it tests this, what I think is really cool physiological hypothesis, that when phospholamin is in its unphosphorylated state, it's inhibiting the sodium pump. And when it's phosphorylated at this particular serine site at the C-terminal, it switches over and becomes an inhibitor of the sodium-calcium exchange at the same time it relieves its inhibition of the sodium pump. In addition, there's great technical innovation here in that Joe's group has used adeno-associated viruses to express a mutant construct of phospholamin that is a phosphomimetic one. So the idea was to separately test the direct effects on the exchanger without being complicated by the known effects on the sodium pump. So I think he's accomplished that really nicely and shown that it has effects that are consistent with that proposed action. The last point I want to make is that this is really a nice combined approach at multiple levels to address what is still a somewhat controversial point in the field. That is, I think Joe has built a compelling case for this story about how phospholamin modulates sodium-calcium exchange, but it's still somewhat controversial and hasn't been fully accepted as an important physiological role for phospholamin. But it's getting harder and harder to not be completely convinced by the data that Joe has and his group have put together.
Thanks very much, Don. Joe, would you care to offer a few comments on what you thought were the key results and highlights of your paper?
I want to first thank you, Gil, and then Don for the very, very flattering comments, and especially Don, who has always been the leader in the group, you know, of the phospholamin story. I think when Don first published in 2008 about, you know, the physiological significance of phospholamin, his group clearly showed that one of the major functions of phospholamin, phosphorylated at serine 68, is to limit the sodium rise, since sodium rise and subsequent arrhythmia generation. We did a follow-up study, you know, following Don in the in vivo using the wild-type and phospholamin knockout mice. And indeed, in the intact, even in the intact heart, you know, what Don predicted was absolutely correct, that in the while in the knockout mouse, there's no decline in the contractility after isoproterenol, but in the wild-type mouse, you know, after the contractility peak at 2 minutes after ISO addition, the contractility progressively declined, and just like Don predicted, it was secondary to a decrease of the intracellular sodium because of the disinhibition of the sodium pump. Then just left my left me wondering what is the function of or what of the our observation that the phosphorylated phospholamin inhibited sodium calcium exchanger. And one of the ways that we thought we could answer this question is to express the phosphomimetic mutant, the S60E mutant, into a knockout mouse. And I'm very, very lucky that I'm in the Center of Translational Medicine, in which a lot of groups have a lot of different techniques that we can bring to bear. So Joe Rabinowitz, you know, helped us make the recombinant adeno-associated virus. And then Wally Cook and Art Feldman's group helped me to do with the in vivo studies. And I think that the most important finding is that using even just a very, very kind of primitive injection, the LV, we can make about 40% of the myocytes express the transgene. Now, this can be improved with intravenous injection or retroorbital vein injection. But at that time, we have not perfected that. But despite only 40% infection rate, we did observe a modest, like Don say, but significant increase in the DPDT. So I thought that was the most significant finding in the paper, is that pure inhibition of the sodium calcium exchanger by the phosphorylated phospholamin helps preserve anotropy during the flight or flight response.
The research you've reported here, Joe, seems very promising. And what can you tell us more about future directions?
We have the constitutive overexpressed S60E mouse and also the inducible S60E mouse. The advantage of, and then we are now, you know, we already have it in the wild, the FVB background, but we want to breed it to the knockout background so that we can induce the S60E expression at will, like at 5 weeks, you know, so that we'll minimize the disturbances to the other transporters. So that will give us almost like 95 to 100% expression in all the myocytes rather than 40%. And hopefully we'll see a much bigger effect in terms of the response to isoproterenol. The other avenue that we want to pursue is really look at the region of NCX that is, you know, that is regulated, that interacts with phospholamin. And we have some very, very nice results using a heterologous system and using alanine scanning mutant.
I agree with all of that, Joe. And I think one of the things that this work pushes forward is that I think others in the field who have not yet replicated the functional effects on the sodium calcium exchanger ought to be encouraged to take a closer look and see if they can confirm and recapitulate these regulatory effects that you've shown.
Certainly the idea of achieving an inducible expression is a really good one so that any compensatory effects can be avoided. And then obviously, as in all modern physiological studies, it needs to be extended right to the molecular level to identify exactly what amino acids are and portion of the molecule are involved in this. So I think with that, we can conclude and encourage you, Joe, to submit your further work to the American Journal of Physiology Heart. Thanks, Joe and Dawn.
And to our readers, thanks for listening to the HAP Heart and Circ podcast series.